Good morning. To our visitors, I am not the normal preacher. Scott and Stephen are both out of town. And I just want to say how thankful I am for those guys. They teach me a lot of lessons, and they taught me one yesterday. That is, don't ever ask a preacher on Saturday if he has someone to fill in for him on Sunday. Because he will say yes, and then ask you to do it. But no, I do appreciate the opportunity that they give us to speak for them. All right. How many of you in your day in and day out life use tools for your work, for things around your house, you know, your home life? How many of you? Show of hands. I would say it's probably everybody. Yeah, pretty much. I thought about it. Do we think of ourselves as tools? I think sometimes we think of Christians as servants. It's definitely biblical. As soldiers, very biblical. But do we think of ourselves as tools? We're going to talk about that tonight. Specifically one aspect of it. So, our main passage is going to be in Proverbs 27. If you want to go, you can go ahead and turn there. If you work with any type of tool, you know that tools require maintenance. I don't care what kind of tool it is. If it's something as simple as a pencil to fill out paperwork or do your homework with, what do you have to stop and do sometimes? You have to sharpen it. If you don't, you can write as long as you want, but it won't be effective. So we're going to look at a very, very simple proverb. It's a very short proverb, but it's arguably my favorite one. Proverbs 27, in verse 17. Iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. At first glance, I think we look at that and we think, well, yeah, makes sense. You know, ladies in the kitchen, if you guys are sharpening your kitchen knives, you might have a sharpening iron or an electric sharpener. How does that work? You take two pieces of, now steel, and you rub them together, simply put, and it sharpens your tools. Guys, whether it's a chainsaw or a saw or maybe if you're an outdoorsman, your knife, same thing. We understand that that works. But we're going to think about it on a spiritual level with one another. First off, to understand this, we have to know a few things. How can we sharpen other people? If I just came up to you and started rubbing you with a piece of steel, you would probably tell me to stop. That's not what we're talking about. So first off, what is sharpening? I tried to look it up in Webster's, and they gave me the very helpful definition of to make sharp. Great. But if you've ever done any metalwork, you know that sharpening is removing material to a fine blade or point, depending on what the tool is. So let's talk about this spiritually. Why are we wanting to do this? First off, you need to know why you're sharpening something. If it's a pencil, why am I sharpening that? To write with. If it's a knife, why am I sharpening that? To cut with. Those things don't change. If I stuck a knife blade in a pencil sharpener, how's that going to work out? Not very well. You're probably going to have sparks and you know, damage to me and to everything else. So we need to know why we're sharpening. Why are we sharpening each other? What's the purpose? Let's look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. You might want to put your marker at Proverbs. We're going to come back there. So, but turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Excuse me. And we're going to read just 12 through 15. We ask you, brothers, to respect those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love because of their work. Be at peace among yourselves, and we urge you, brothers, admonish the idle, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with them all. See that no one repays evil for evil, but always seek to do good with one another. Okay, so why are we supposed to do all these things? I should add right now, because I forgot to, this lesson was not planned in conjunction with the series that my dad just did a few weeks ago, but they kind of go together. What is the purpose? What is our goal? I think if we think about it for about 5 seconds, we all realize our goal as Christians is to get to heaven. And it's also our goal to get as many other people to go to heaven with us. So that's our purpose. Having that purpose in mind, how are we going to accomplish sharpening? So first off, there's a few things you need to know before you sharpen something. What is the material you're sharpening? We already talked about the difference between a pencil and a knife blade. Those are very different materials, and they require very different methods to sharpen. Look at Hebrews chapter 10, please. In Hebrews chapter 10, let's look at verses 24 and 25. Hebrews 10, 24 and 25. Let us consider how to stir up one another to good works, not neglecting to meet together as is the habit of some, but encourage one another and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Now, I want to encourage you to not do what is very easy to do. When we read this passage, what's the point we're normally making? We're normally making the point that, well, we need to be here, you know, for services, midweek and on Sunday. That's true. I'm not trying to take away from that point at all. But we're going to expand that a lot. In order to know how to sharpen something, you need to know the material. Well, how do you learn a material? You spend time with it. If I handed you a tool and said, here, I need you to sharpen this, and you've never seen the tool in your life, well, do I use a file? Do I use an electric sharpener? How do I do that? If we don't know each other, how am I going to go to somebody and say, you need to work on this? There's a blemish. Maybe you need to get out. And also, how am I going to know if maybe I need to be gentle? I just need to kind of polish a little bit. Or do I need to be hard and really grind something down? We're not going to know that if we don't know each other. So how can we get to know each other? Very easily. Spend time outside of church. Be here for church. I don't want the elders to, you know, pull me off stage. Be here for church. But you know how when I was a teenager and people were giving me dating advice that clearly didn't work? They always said, don't go on a movie for your first date. Well, why not? You don't actually talk when you're watching a movie. Right now, you guys are not talking and getting to know each other. You're listening to me for the next few minutes. So spend time engaging in conversation. Invest. Think of it as an investment. Invest time in one another. How can we do this? Well, think about it throughout the week. So go to studies, Bible studies, other than our midweek Bible study. There's studies, I was thinking about it, Tuesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, sometimes Saturday. Just about every day of the week. And you can go to those. Those are open to people. Please make use of them. Engage in conversation about different topics or different passages. Maybe you don't understand, maybe you do understand, and somebody else doesn't. Use those opportunities. Work on projects with one another. This is something that I think some people it comes very easily. I love, when I have a project too, I love working with other people on it. I don't like working by myself. Some people, that might be a harder thing to do. But spend time working on a project with one another. One of the things that came to mind is last summer, a bunch of us guys got together on a Saturday, and we cut wood. I don't think any of us would say, I love cutting wood. But we cut wood, we split wood, we carried it, and we helped a brother and sister out. And I was thinking, throughout the day, we had older guys, some that could be considered elderly, and we had young guys who could barely lift an axe. But every one of the guys there was useful, and I think we all learned from each other. And it was a wonderful way to spend a Saturday. Another thing I would encourage you to do, have one-on-one conversations. Go outside of your comfort zone. Believe it or not, I'm a shy person. I don't meet new people very well. If you ask my parents, I would hide behind them as a kid. And so if I could do that instead of meet new people, I would do it. But they forced me to. And I have to force myself to at my age. But get outside of your comfort zone. Maybe it's a new person that just, you know, moved here or just started attending. Or maybe it's the person that's been sitting across the room from you and you just never really got to know them. Get to meet them. Go out for lunch. Go out, maybe work on a project one-on-one. Do something that engages the two of you so you can have a better understanding of your brother or sister. And I would also add, one of the best conversations I ever had, it doesn't have to be anything big, best conversation I ever had was with a brother in Florida over Dunkin' Donuts coffee. And I don't like coffee. But it was the best, most life-changing conversation I have ever had. Also, another thing that I don't think we do, I think we all like recreation time, different ways. Some of us like sports, some of us don't. But in our recreation, spend time with each other. One, it helps build, teamwork, which can translate into the spiritual atmosphere as well. But, when we're playing volleyball together, I know some of the women like to walk together. Some guys might go fishing, hunting, things like that together. Do things like that. Plan time during your week to do that. And I think the thing that you'll realize is very quickly, you're going to have a deeper understanding of your brethren, of your brothers and sisters without trying. It just kind of happens naturally when you do that. Okay, so I've spent time with the material in question, i.e. each other. Now what do I do with it? Well, in spending time with each other, you're going to realize something. We're not all the same. If you look at people, take my family for example. My brother and I are blood brothers. We don't even look alike. He's redhead, fair-skinned. I'm brown hair and not as fair-skinned. I actually can tan, which is nice. But when we went to college, some people literally did not believe that we were brothers. And I think part of it isn't the looks. It's we act differently. He's a quieter, laid-back kind of person, and I'm not. But in realizing that we're not the same, you need to realize that we don't need to work on each other the same way. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 12. I'm sorry, not 1 Corinthians, 1 Timothy. I was going to skip that, and I forgot to cross that out. 1 Timothy chapter 5. All right, this is something I'll admit that personally I struggle with. I have a hard time gauging my reaction and my conversation to people based on them. I want to do things the way that I do things. The way that people work with me is the way that I think I should work with everybody else, and that doesn't necessarily work because, like I said, we're not the same. So 1 Timothy 5, verses 1 through 2. Do not rebuke an older man, but encourage him as you would a father, younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters in all purity. Okay, what is Paul telling Timothy to do? I think he's basically telling him, think about what you're doing. Think about who you're talking with and who you're working with. And I think that's important. If I went to one of the guys around my age and said, hey, listen, you were really a jerk last night. I mean, I think you need to work on that. He might be like, okay, yeah, I'm sorry, dude. I'll work on that. What if I went to one of the older men and said, hey, you were really a jerk last night. You need to work on that. I wouldn't dare, and I don't think any of you would. Do you think the reaction's going to be the same? I don't think so. Or think about if I said to one of the guys, again, my age, hey, dude, that was really dumb. Maybe don't do that again. We might laugh it off. What if I went to a girl my age and said, hey, that was really dumb? She might either punch me in the nose, or two, run away crying. Whose fault is that? Mine. Because I didn't temper myself to work with them. excuse me. I think we also need to realize that even amongst people, different situations require a different reaction. Dad brought this up, but we're going to look at it again. We're going to compare two characters in the Bible that both screwed up, but the way that those situations were handled is couldn't be more different. So let's look at Apollos in Acts chapter 18. I wish we knew more about Apollos than we do. He seems like an interesting character, but for whatever reason, God didn't see fit to give us more background information on him. So Apollos in Acts chapter 18, starting in verse 24. Now a Jew named Apollos, a native of Alexandria, came to Ephesus. He was an eloquent man, competent in the scriptures. He had been instructed in the way of the Lord and was fervent in spirit. He spoke and taught accurately the things concerning Jesus, though he knew only the baptism of John. He began to speak boldly in the synagogue, but when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God. The way of God more accurately. So you see Apollos, his motives are pure. He's not trying to do anything wrong. But he's mistaken. So what do Aquila and Priscilla do? They pull him aside. They didn't embarrass him publicly. They pull him aside and explain to him his mistake. And it seems like from then on, he goes on and does wonderful work. Parents, when you were raising your children, did you always react to things they did the same way? No. I mean, if you just spank the kid for every little thing, how effective is that going to be? I mean, I know my parents, sometimes, even before I said it or did it, they would look at me and be like, you don't want to do that. And normally they were right. In fact, I would say all the time they were right. Sometimes, if I knew better and I still did it or didn't do what I was supposed to do, their reaction would be much stronger. Let's look at Peter in Galatians 2. I don't know about you guys. I find Peter to be a very easy to identify with character. He gets a lot right, but man, does he also screw up bad sometimes. And even after, you know, this isn't when he's just an apostle following Jesus, sticking his foot in his mouth just about every time he talks. He's grown up, he's matured, but he still makes a mistake, and it's a pretty big one. So in Galatians 2, and starting verse 11, but when Cephas, Peter's other name, came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face, because he stood condemned. For before certain men came from James, he was eating with the Gentiles, but when they came, he drew back and separated himself, fearing the circumcision party. And the rest of the Jews acted hypocritically along with them, so that even Barnabas was led astray by their hypocrisy. But when I saw that their conduct was not in step with the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas before them all, if you, though a Jew, live like a Gentile and not like a Jew, how can you force the Gentiles to live like Jews? Think about what Peter had done. He turned his back on his brethren because he was afraid of the reaction of some of the Jews. He betrayed them in a way. And what did Paul do? Paul didn't pull him aside and say, Peter, you know, you shouldn't have done that. No, he opposed him to his face. His reaction was strong. I think we need to think about that. The other thing I think we need to realize is we all have different personalities. And also, we have different uses. Scott just talked about, I believe last week, about, you know, the part where it talks about, you know, there's different parts of the body. How can the eye say to the foot, I have no need of you? And how if we were all eyes, we'd see really well. But we couldn't move if we were in danger. That, you know, body isn't going to last very long. So I want us to think about something. I brought, doing something I've never done before, I brought some props. I think my dad thinks I'm crazy. But this is a tool we use in the fire department. It's called the Denver tool because it was invented in Denver. Another name for it is the TNT tool. I think it's aptly named. You can cut through studs with one shot. I've done it. It's impressive. Has a sledgehammer, has an axe, has some tools on the other end. It's an extremely strong and powerful tool. To sharpen it, you have to file the edge, and it takes time to do. In fact, this one needs to be sharpened now. If I was in a fire and got in trouble, this could get me through a wall. This could get me through a floor. If I was on the ceiling and needed to get in, I could go through the ceiling with it. I can get into somebody, or I can get out of a dangerous situation. It's literally a lifesaver. Now, that's powerful. This, I had to keep in my wallet so I wouldn't lose it. Anybody have any idea what this is? It's wrapped up to protect you and to keep it clean. This is a scalpel blade. It is less than two, the blade itself is less than an inch long. It's made of stainless steel. You could snap it in your fingers if you wanted to. Wear gloves if you're going to try. Now, you might think, if I am in a burning building, this is useless to me. This cannot, will not ever get me out. This will also never help me get inside if someone's trapped in there. But have you ever thought how many lives this has saved in trained hands? A surgeon can do some amazing things with this. He can operate on someone's brain to help them stop having seizures. He can do all manner of things that I will never even be able to understand with a piece of steel that's less than 2 inches long. Now, I want us to think about, I'll bring this around, and I'll be gentle with it so we don't scratch up the podium. Okay. What if I treated everybody like they were a scalpel? Have you ever thought about how you sharpen a scalpel? You sharpen that to a very, very fine edge. But what if I tried to do that, put a scalpel's edge on my TNT tool? I could get it really, really sharp, but you know what's going to happen as soon as I hit something with it? It's going to shatter. It's going to be useless, less than useless to me, to become a danger. Same way, what if I sharpened my scalpel the way you sharpen a TNT tool? You're going to destroy it. It's not going to work. It's not going to be worth anything. So I want us to think about that. When we're working with our brethren, when we see problems, and guess what? We will. That's part of life. Think about, maybe they just need some fine tuning. Or maybe I need to pull out a file and grind something away. Parents understand that, I think, better than the rest of us do. So I want us to think about that. That's one of the best ways to help someone become sharper as a Christian. If we're not careful, though, it's also one of the best ways to destroy somebody. The final way that we can help people be sharper as Christians is to be sharp ourselves. I think sometimes we forget about that. But think about it. My mom has one of those electric knife sharpeners, and it's great. You stick the knife in, and you pull it past the metal. Those pieces of metal are super sharp inside that sharpener. And it is literally cutting away and grinding away the metal. If I took two blocks of steel, it can be the purest, hardest steel I can find, and rub it together. Will that ever make anything sharp? It will cause friction. It'll do a real good job of that. But we don't want to cause friction. We want to improve. We want to sharpen. Okay. That's really all of the lesson right there. Think about what you're doing before you do it. Think about how you're going to work with somebody. And on the flip side, when you go to talk with someone, to work with someone, realize what happens to a sharpener when you sharpen a blade with it. Part of that metal comes off too. You're probably going to end up being sharpened. Don't think that you have all the answers. If you do that, it won't work. If we do this, I think we can help each other. We can help every one of us can help each other get closer to God and closer to heaven. This is the part of the sermon I'm never good with. This isn't a lesson to bring people to Christ. It just isn't. But if you thought about it and you realize that you need to become a Christian, you can do that here in a minute. We're going to stand and sing. Come to the front, and we'll be happy to assist you. Maybe you've thought about other things that you need to do as a Christian. Maybe you've seen that blemish in your brother, and you realize, I need to talk with him. Do that. Don't be scared. Don't be a coward. Go talk to that brother. Maybe, and hopefully we look at ourselves too, you've seen a blemish or a crack in your blade and you realize, I need help. Maybe I can't figure this one out on my own. Also, don't be a coward. Go and talk to somebody that maybe is sharper than you and who can help you get rid of that. Whatever your need is, come forward to the front as we stand and sing.